communities, he mentions in his Travelogue,
Chachmei Provence,
there's a strong community of Talmid Chachamim in this part of France, in Provence. We have already Tosfos in different places quotes the Chachmei Narbona, and we quote their opinion in Shulchan Aruch in a few different places. Tosfos has the famous problem, the Gemara says in Brachas, that when you bench Mezumin, the Koshal Bracha should be rinsed out on the inside and the outside, Shtifa V'Hadocha, and you need Chai and Mole, the cup of wine should be full, and you need Chai. So the simple Pshat in Chai is that the wine should be fresh wine, not having mixed in any water. So Tosfos has the Kasha, but the Gemara Bracha says not so. Another place in Bracha says that for the purpose of benching a Kiddush Alakos and Havdal Alakos and Bichas Almazon Alakos, it should be Dafke Mazuk. The wine should not be fresh wine. You have to mix in a little water. It's going to be too sharp if you don't mix in water. So Tosfos quotes the Chachmei Narbona, who say that the word Chai in the context of Chai Mole Shtif Hadocha means that the cup should not be broken. Cup should not be chipped on top. That's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Even if you have a big cup and it's going to have a revius and it's going to be full to the top, but if it's chipped a little bit on the top, you shouldn't use that. That's not becoveting. So that's quoted La'aloch. It's based on that that Moshe Feinstein gave his opinion that it's not proper to say Kiddush over a plastic cup or a paper cup. If it's a disposable cup, it's also certainly not becoveting. If you have a silver bech and it has a chip on the top, you can't use it. So for sure, if you have a disposable cup, it's not proper to use it. Then Tosfos quotes a Chachmei Narbona about the issue of Gvina Sakum. But we have a lot, there were quite a few communities in the days of the Balei HaTosfos here in Provence where they had Talmid HaChachamim. And the Jews had a different name for every city. They didn't call it by the same name that the Umas HaElam did. So the city Lunel, which means the moon, so the Jews used to call it Ir HaYareach, or something like that. And Montpellier means the mountain. What does it mean?
Yeah, the facade.
They call the name of the city Hahar. Sometimes they write Montpellier, and sometimes they write Min Hahar. And so on. They gave every city, they gave a different name. Pasquier, they called Kiryas Yorim. Every city they gave in Provence, they called it by a different name. And many Rishonim lived here, and they had different traditions, different minhagim, and different shitas, different girsas in the Gemara. It's interesting, after the Ramban passed away, so the Talmidei HaRamban came to Provence to learn, because the Rebbe passed away, there's no one to learn by. So there were big clashes between the shitas that they followed and the practices that they had in Provence. So the Meiri was in Provence at that time. He lived in Parpignan, also another city in Provence. So he wrote a whole sefer, Mogin Avos, to defend the Minhag Avosov. So for many years, the historians knew, many Gdolim knew that there was a book called Mogin Avos. They didn't realize what it was. They didn't have the manuscript of the book. They just heard there's such a book. So they thought that it was a commentary on Pirkei Avos. So the Miri has a commentary on Pirkei Avos. But the Sefer Mogin Avos is different. He deals with 24 specific issues that there were clashes between the Talmidei HaRamban who came here as opposed to the Minhag HaMokum. Several of them are still issues today. If you have dessert at the end of the meal, if you have fruits at the end of the meal, whether you say brach on the fruits or not. That's still a shaila. So that was one of the issues that they debated. And one of the issues that they debated is quoted at length in the Mishnah Brura, that when you have a funeral on the second day, Yontif, so the Gemara says the Yisraelim are permitted to do all the malachas, to dig the grave and to do everything that's necessary, even to cut the cloth, to make the tachrichim, and so on. What if you have a funeral on the first day, Yontif? So the Gemara says you have Nochrim do all of the work. So there was a big dispute in the days of when the Talmid HaRamban came. Is it permissible for the Yisraelim to violate the Rabbanim on the first day, Yontif? why they permitted to do malacha on the second day yontif to bury the maize, because it's only the rabbanon. Maybe on the first day yontif, whatever is only the rabbanon is also permissible by the Israel. That's a long arichas in the Mishnah Brura where he quotes from this say from Magen Avos by the Meiri. By the time the Mishnah Brura was written, he already had access to this Magen Avos. Then the first of the 24 issues that they were debating was regarding reciting Kel Melech Naman. When you daven in shul and you say Shema, so this was a minig al pi kabbalah that the Chazan says three additional words Hashem Elokeichem Emes are something to be mashlam 248 words in the Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema sum total has 245 words, and al pi kabbalah they started this minig to say three additional words. So in Provence, that was the issue, whether you should say, that was one of the big debates. Is it proper to start off Kriya Shema Kel Melech Naman? That should count as the three additional words. And the Rosh Yeshiva says, Kel Melech Naman is Amen, so you're really answering Amen after your own bracha of Habercha Bar Yisrael B'Yahava. So some Rishonim held, you have to answer Amen after your own bracha. So that's the first of the 24 essays. But in Provence, it was known that they had many different girsois in the Gemara. And even the same girsah, they had many different interpretations. Many things were very different. You had in Narbona, the Av Bezdin of Narbona wrote the Sefer HaEshkol. Some call him the Ravid. He was Rabbein Avraham ben Yitzchak. But he was known as the Av Bezdin. So he's Rabbein Avraham Av Bezdin. And his daughter married the famous Ravid that we are familiar with. The Ravid married the daughter of the Ravid. The Shach, in one place in Yerideya, works on Akasha. How come these Rishonim quote the Ravid as saying one way, and the other Rishonim quote the Ravid as saying the other way? So he says, you're talking about two different Ravids. There was a third Ravid who wrote a book on Jewish history. He's never quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. He never had anything to say on Halacha. But these two Ravids were both Talmid HaChachamim. And it's interesting, the famous Ravid, the more famous Ravid, the one who wrote on the side of the Rambam, wrote a commentary on Mishnayis Adius, now Mishnayis Kinim. So I think at the end of his commentary on Mishnayis Kinim, there's the last few lines are from his father-in-law, the way his father-in-law praises him, how fortunate he is to have this son-in-law who's so learned, and he wrote this knockout commentary on Mishnayis Kinim, and no one understood what was going on, and his son-in-law figured it out. The Ravid wrote his Hasagas. There was a new style of writing, to write Hasagas on Svarim that instead of writing your own Sefer, he took the Rambam, and a few times in every paragraph he disagrees with the Rambam. Once in a while he gives the Rambam a Yashikayach, what he said. We discussed one of them in the Daf Yomi the other day, but most of the time the Ravid is masig on the Rambam. The Ravid did the same with the Rif. Every so often the Ravid writes, he's very young, when he's writing all of these disagreements with the Rif, and the Rif is the big Pesach, like today someone would write a book disagreeing with the Mishnah Brura, disagreeing with the Chazon Ish or something like that. So the Ravid says he's very young, and it's a chutzpah perhaps on his part to write that he's in disagreement with the Rif. It was the Pesach HaMekubal, he was the accepted Pesach, but nonetheless he feels that he has to express his opinion, and he writes, and I'm going to get reward even if what I say is probably wrong. The Rif is probably right and I'm probably wrong, but still I'm going to get schar for trying to figure out the truth. Then he wrote Hasogas on the Baal Hamor. He learned Bechavrusa with the Baal Hamor. He was older than the Rambam. The Ravid writes in one place, I'm an old man and the Rambam is a youngster, so I have the right to disagree with him. He apparently was older than the Baal Hamor also, his Chavrusa. So he wrote Hasogas on the Baal Hamor. The Sefer Hamor was written Hasogas on the Rif, and then the Ravid wrote Hasogas on the Baal Hamor. And the Ravid wrote a Sefer on Hilchas Nida, Taras HaMishpacha, called Bali HaNefesh, so his Chavrusa, the Baal Hamor, wrote Hasogas on his Sefer. That's printed today. You have the Bali HaNefesh by the Ravid. In the back, you have all of it. Sometimes on the bottom of the page, you have all of the Hasogas of the Baal Hamor against him. They had different shitas, different girsos, different traditions. And it was a lot of them were quoted in the Shulchan Aruch. Very often, their opinions are accepted la halacha. I thank you for wishing me a happy birthday. Okay. That there was a real center of learning in the Provence was called Lunel. Lunel means this, the moon. So the Rabbeinu Zrachya HaLevi wrote the Sefer HaMo'or when he lived in Lunel. So he called the Sefer HaMo'or HaKoton, the moon, because that's how, that was the name of the city. When we got to Baba Kama, he writes that Nezikin is much more complicated than the rest of Shas. So you can't learn Nezikin with the light of the moon, you have to have sunlight. So he switches the title of the Sefer, it's called Hamor HaGadol. Starting from the Zikin to the end, it's called Hamor HaGadol. There are many different famous chidushim of Rabbeinu Zrachya HaLevi. One of them, Dr. Berkowitz, was speaking about on Shabbos. Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham, quotes the comment of the Rabbeinu Zrachya HaLevi from Lunel that it's so complicated to know the dinim of when you're permitted to put cooked food back on top of the blech, when you're not allowed to. So many people want to play it safe, so they eat cold cuts, they eat cold food on Shabbos. Rabbi Nizrachi writes that that's not proper, that whoever doesn't eat some warm food on Shabbos, either cholent or hot tea or coffee or something, Zorach Badika Achrov, you have to check to make sure maybe he's from the group of the Karoim. Because the Karaites used to interpret the Pasuk, the Sevaru Eish, the Chomash Hesech V'yayim HaShabbos, that you're not allowed to leave any fires on. So on Friday night they would sit in the dark, and on Friday night the food was warm because it was heated up on Erev Shabbos. But Shabbos in the morning, all the food was cold. So some claim that the Bracha on the Hadlik National Shabbos was instituted in the days of the Rishonim. We really don't have earlier sources for the Bracha. And Tosfos has two opinions. One opinion that Tosfos, you don't say a bracha when you light the candles on Erev Shabbos. You don't say a bracha when you set up the cholent. You don't say a bracha when you take a shower, when you set the table, when you vacuum the rug. So why should the preparation of lighting the candles be different from the others? And our practice is that we do say a bracha. So some of the historians suggest that maybe the bracha was instituted as a way for the Rabbanim to demonstrate that we reject what the Karaites said, that we consider it permissible in a mitzvah to light the candles. We say bracha, shekadoshanu b'mitzvah v'tzivon. Some have the practice, Chacham Avadya quotes this from some Sfaradishi communities, they only said a bracha lahadlik ner shel Shabbos. Before Yontif, they didn't say a bracha. And then according to this, it makes sense, because Yontif, even the Karaites used to light the candles. Only applies to Shabbos. Ayanta, because of the heter echel nefesh, you're permitted to light candles, you're permitted to cook food. So that's why some communities had a practice that they only said a bracha on hadlokas aneris on Erev Shabbos. Erev Yanta they didn't. The Baal HaMo'or, in his commentary at the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, has a famous dispute with his chavrusa, the Ravid, who seems to have been older than him. Baal HaMo'or writes that even though it says in the Gemara that the Bayis Sheni only lasted 420 years, Bayis Rishon says in Tanakh that it lasted 410 years. Bayis Sheni is the no Tanakh. So the Gemara says that it only lasted 420 years. And the Gemara says this based on the interpretation of Psukim in Suvim, that several of the kings, Persian kings and so on, mentioned in Suvim are different names for the same person. Now, in the Goyisha history books, they say these were different kings who ruled one after the other, and the Bayis Sheni was much longer than 420 years. So the Rabbeinu Zrachya HaLevi in the Sefer HaMo'or writes, it's a Dov Yadua Mefursam, it's well known that the rabbis of the Talmud made a mistake, and the Bayis Sheni lasted much longer than 420 years. We all know. The Ravid has hasogas on the comments of the Rabbeinu Zrachya, his chavrusa, so he screams at him, Apikiris, how can you say against the Gemara? Gemara says, Bayis Sheni was only 420 years, how can you say Takir? This has been a machlekes, an ongoing machlekes. In recent years, many Rabbonim in Europe before the war adopted the position of the Rabbeinu Zrachya, that Bayis Sheni was much longer than 420 years. We all know from the Goyisha history books. the Chazanish writes like the Raivim. What do you mean? The Gemara's history is more reliable than the Goyish history books. There's no Shaila. Balamor has the famous comment on Maseches Rosh Hashanah and Daf Chof on the base is a very difficult, complicated passage in the Gemara, and Rashi and Tosfos give an interpretation, but it doesn't really fit in so well into the words of the Gemara. So Rabbi Mizrahi interprets the whole Gemara is talking about the international dateline, and the Gemara establishes where the dateline is, namely 90 degrees to the east of Yerushalayim. And he explains the rabbis of the Talmud knew that the earth is a globe. They didn't think it was flat. Nochrim thought it was flat. The Rabbanim and the Gemara knew that it was a globe. And when it's nighttime here, it's daytime over there. And you have to establish an international dateline somewhere. So the rabbis of the Talmud assumed that there are two hemispheres to every globe. The upper hemisphere and the lower hemisphere. The upper hemisphere has Yerushalayim in the middle. When the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, Eretz Yisrael Gevaya Mikol Ha'aretzais, and Yerushalayim Gevaya Mikol Eretz Yisrael. So he says, is that true? Eretz Yisrael is the highest elevation above sea level. The Alps is much higher than Eretz Yisrael. What do you mean Yerushalayim Gevaya Mikol Eretz Yisrael? Yerushalayim is the highest elevation above sea level. The Talmud itself says, the Gemara says, that there was a city, there was a location, Ein Itim, which is not in Yerushalayim, it's out of Yerushalayim. David HaMelech thought that's the correct place to build the Beis HaMikdash, because Seichel dictates you should build the Beis HaMikdash on the highest elevation in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara knew that Yerushalayim is not the highest elevation. So how does this other Gemara say that Yerushalayim Gevoyim we call Eretz Yisrael? So Rabbi Mizrahi writes in his commentary on Rosh Hashanah on Daf Chav, no, it means when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world and everything began, so what was on top? Yerushalayim was on top. So 90 degrees to the east of Yerushalayim, that happens to be a line that cuts through Korea, that cuts through Australia, in the hemisphere below the equator. So that line was the beginning of Ahiyera Vahibaker. That was the beginning. It was Tzeisel Kechavim at that point. So since when the world was created, that was the beginning of all of time, the globe started to spin on its axis, with Yerushalayim on top and Korea all the way at the edge, at the right edge. So that's where the international dateline should be. And this is what the Chazon Ish adopted, that position. He says, all of the Rishonim who talk about the topic of the dateline all concur. They all say the same shot in the Gemara. Balamor has, we know that in New York area there are several Rishonim where they daven Vasikin. So we all know what Vasikin means. The complete fulfillment of the Inyan of Vasikin is you start davening in such a way that you say Kriya Shema right before the sun rises. You say Shema Nesri right after the sun rises. When does the sun rise? When the first bit of the sun is visible above the horizon. That's the Pashup Shad. So this is a problem because there's an opinion in the Mishnah in Brachas that you have to recite Kriya Shema davke after the sun rises. So how can this Gemara say that the Vasikin of the Chasidim Anshei Maisa, Minig Vasikin, that they recited Kriya Shema before the sun rises? Mishnah says that you're not Yotze. So the Rabbi Natam makes fun of the Vasikin. He says, but yeah, we know the Vasikin always do Kishalaikidin. The Chasidim always do the wrong thing. And the Vasikin part Yotze. You're only Yotze Kriya Shema if you say after the sun rises. And that's how there are tzaddikim in our generation who daven Vasikin every day. And after the davening is over, then they repeat Kriya Shema a second time because of this Rabbi Natam. Rabbi Natam holds that you can't fulfill Kriya Shema if he recited before sunrise. So Rabbi Mizrahi Alevi wants to answer the contradiction between the two Gemaras. So he says the following. Vasikin is more complicated than we thought. When the sun starts to rise above the horizon, it takes approximately 2 minutes from the beginning to the end till the entire ball of the sun is visible above the sun, above the horizon. So he says Vasikin means you start davening in such a way that you begin Kriya Shema right after the sun began to rise above the horizon, and we give you 2 minutes to finish from the beginning of Kriya Shema till Goal Yisrael, and then you start the Shemona Esrei right after the entire sun rises above the horizon. That's a fast davening. So, 2 minutes from the beginning of Shema Yisrael till the end of Goal Yisrael. You say he claims that that's the Vasikin. That's a Yifarim for the Kasha. Balamor is famous, the Rabbi Nizrachi is famous for his comment that on Rosh Hashanah the Gemara says that Shemona Esrei has to consist of 9 brachas, the first 3 brachas, the last 3 brachas, and then in the middle you say Malchus Achronus and Shofaros. So he says the Gemara never said that that's only by Musaf. So he thinks that it applies to Ma'ariv and to Shacharis and to Musaf and to Mincha, all the 4, every tefillah has to be 9 brachas. That's not our practice. We only say Malchus, Chana, Shofaros, and Musaf when we blow Shofar. We don't say in all of the tefillahs. Then Rabbi Nizrachi. Thank you. Then Rabbi Nizrachi records what was the common practice when he was a child. He says nobody had a machzer. Apparently, the text of the Siddur and the text of the machzer is considered part of the Torah Shebaal Peh. Because it was composed by the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, by the Chachamim. So just like it was prohibited, the Gemara Shabbos says like this in Kol Kisvei, just like it was prohibited to write down the laws of the Torah Shebaal Peh, they couldn't write down Mishnayos, so too it was prohibited to write down the text of the brachas and the text of the machzer. So the Gemara says you're not allowed to write a Siddur. So in the later generations, when they permitted the writing down of the Mishnayos, they still didn't write down the Siddur because they didn't think that that was really so necessary. The whole heter to write down the Mishnayos was based on Eslasus Lashem Hefer Teresecho, that the whole Torah Shebaal Peh will be forgotten. But they weren't so concerned about the Siddur. So in later generations, you have the Siddur of Rav Amram Goyen, and the Goyenim started writing down the text of the Siddur. So even when they wrote down the text of the daily Siddur, they still didn't write down the text of the Machzer Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So the Balamor writes very surprisingly. He says the din really requires to say all the 9 brachas, Malchus and Shofaros, on Rosh Hashanah by Ma'ariv, by Shacharis, by Musaf, by Mincha. But he says as a child he remembers that no one knew the Malchus and Shofaros by heart, no one had a machzer, only the chazan had to learn how to say it by heart. So the tzibur, when they davened tefillah balachash, only said the first 3 brachas, the last 3 brachas, and the middle bracha, they didn't say Malchus and Shofaros, they improvised, and they said, like Atav Chatanim Kolam, Atitlanus Yama Zikarn Hazeh, Yom Tru Mikro Kaidush, Yalav Yavoy, Yama Zikarn Hazeh, something like Vahasienu. And they ended off the Kaddish Yisrael, the Yama Zikarn. They didn't mention any of the Malchus and Shofaros. And even though the Brach Sam Yaakov Zuazu, they said a Shemana Esrei on Rosh Hashanah, like we would say in another Yantif, only 7 brachas. And the Chazan would repeat the Shemana Esrei, and he would say the 9 brachas. The whole thing is a startling practice. This is what the Palomar writes. As a child, he remembers that was the practice. Even though... No, the only blue shofar are Muslim. Right. The Gemara says originally, Zriz Magdim and the Mitzvahs, so they used to blow shofar in Shacharis. Can't blow at night, you're not Yotzei Balayla. But you have to blow in the daytime. So originally, Zriz Magdim and the Mitzvahs, so they blew in Shacharis. And then in the later generations, because there was some kind of Gzeiras Hashmad against the observing Mitzvahs, so they moved the shofar blowing till Musaf. When Napoleon wanted to become the ruler over France, he wanted to emancipate, he wanted to conquer the whole Europe and to emancipate the Jews, so there was a big machlokes among the Chassidish Rebbes whether to pray for him or against him. So many of the Chassidish Rebbes thought we could lead normal lives if we'll be emancipated, there won't be so much redifas hadas, it'll be better for the Jews. And the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, felt that it'll be a disaster for the Jews. If they'll have emancipation, they'll have freedom, then they'll give up the observance of the religion. So somehow they all made up that Rosh Hashanah they're going to daven hard. Each one is going to daven for his position. They're going to daven Napoleon should win. The other's going to daven Napoleon should lose. And they all assume that whoever will blow shofar first, the shofar enhances the prayers. So they somehow assume whoever will blow shofar first will win. His prayers will be accepted. So one of the Chassidish Rebbe said, he blew shofar, he told the Chassidim, they're going to start davening Vasikin and Rosh Hashanah at the crack of dawn, and they're going to leave out all the piyutim and all the nigunim.
Come, David, a little...
It's in the town of Kanin.
Itzkin was waging war against Russia. So the Chassidish Rebbes from Eastern Europe had a big dispute whether they should be mispalel, that he should win, so that there would be freedom for the Jews, emancipation, or no, that would be a disaster. So the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, felt we have to be mispalel that he should lose, because if the Jews will be emancipated, then there'll be assimilation, and they won't be medaktik, they won't be shomer mitzvah. So somehow all the Rebbes made up that whoever will blow shofar, tkiyah shofar enhances the tefillah. Whoever will blow shofar earliest, and that Rosh Hashanah, his prayers will be answered. So there was one Chassidish Rebbe, I already forgot which one of the famous ones, told his Chassidim they're going to daven at Vasikin, the earliest possible time. They're going to leave out all the piyutim, they're going to daven quickly, no singing, in order to get to the tkiyah as early as possible. Then the story goes that when he blew the shofar, he felt that he lost out already, that his prayers were not going to be answered, that somehow he felt that the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Alter Rebbe, had beat him to it, he already blew shofar. So when he met up with him, he said, the Litvak won out. They used to refer to the Lubavitcher as a Litvak. So when they met each other in person, so he asked them, how did you daven so quickly? I started with my Kehillah the earliest possible time, before sunrise, and we left out all the piyutim, and we davened quickly, and we left out no singing and everything. How did you get to tkiyah so early? So the Lubavitcher Rebbe told them, I blew shofar before shachris. I thought it was such an important issue. He thought this was going to destroy all of Yiddishkeit if Napoleon is going to win, give emancipation for the Jews in Eastern Europe. So he blew shofar before shachris. Rav Soloveitchik used to tell the story. His father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, was the rabbi in a village, Chaslavich, which was all the Babich. So they asked him, how did that happen? If all of the Balabatim in the village were the Babicher, so why did they appoint the Misnaget as the rabbi? Rav Soloveitchik used to be fond of telling the story that the Lubavitcher Rebbe not only prayed that Napoleon should lose, and he blew shofar early, he would get French Lubavitcher Hasidim to spy on the French army and to find out what the secrets are, what they plan to do, and give over all the information to the Russian army to make sure that the Russians win the war. So the French found out about this, so they were searching after Schneerson, that was his name. They were searching after the Lubavitcher Rebbe, they wanted to kill him because he was ruining their war effort. So they finally tracked him down, and they knew that he was in this village. He ran away to the village, Chaslavich. So the French army surrounded the whole village, and they made up, they're going to have a house-to-house search to find out where he's hiding, and they're going to kill him. So when the Hasidim heard about this, so at that time, the rabbi in the village happened to have been from Volozhin Yeshiva, happened to be a Misnagdim. So they didn't know the Misnagdim were very Esh Lahav against the Hasidim. They were opposed to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, so they didn't know whether the rabbi would hide out the Lubavitcher Rebbe in his home. Maybe he won't want to save him. So they asked the rabbi, would he hide him? So he said, of course he's going to hide him. What kind of a question? I don't agree with his hashkafe, but I can't master him. The Nochem should kill him. Of course he's going to hide him. So they hid the Rebbe in the basement. And then when the soldiers came knocking on the door and they wanted to know whether the rabbi knows where Schneerson is, so he put on a whole show, so he said, Schneerson, he's destroying Judaism, give me that Schneerson and I'll choke him to death with my own hands. I'm looking for him also. We want to kill him. He's destroying Yiddishkeit with his chassidus. So he put on such a show. So the soldiers didn't think it was necessary to search in his house. So they looked in the whole city. They didn't find him. And they assumed that he must have escaped. He must have gotten away somehow. He slipped out. So after all, after the whole French army left, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe came out from hiding from the rabbi's home, so he made a comment that sometimes it's a mazel, it's a good thing to have a misnag de shirov in a chassidish village. So that was from that time on, that was a tradition. In Chaslavich, they would always appoint a real misnagid as the rabbi of the village, and that's how Rabbi Soloveitchik's father served as the rabbi in that village for quite a few years. Balamor, Rabbi Nizrachi from Lunel, is famous for many of his comments on the Gemara and the Rif. He has one famous comment that recently someone wrote a whole essay about this, elaborating on the theme. He writes that on Pesach night, the main part of the Hallel is the bulk of the Hallel which is recited after the meal. And he quotes the passage in the Gemara, the end of Tainus, when the Mishnah says that if there was Atziras Gishomim in Eretz Yisrael, if there's no rain and nothing is going to grow and the people are going to starve to death and the animals are going to die, it's going to be a sakana for everybody and the whole economy will be destroyed. There was a, so there used to be Gozer Tainus. So the Mishnah says, what happens if everybody's fasting and then it starts raining in the middle of the day? The Mishnah says that if it rains before, different opinions in the Tanoim. So the accepted opinion is if it starts raining before Chatzos, then they don't have to fast the rest of the day. But if they fast until after Chatzos and then it starts raining, so since they already fasted until after Chatzos, they have to complete the Tonus. The Mishnah says if it rains before Chatzos, everybody should go home and break their fast and have a bite, eat something. Then they should come back to Shul and recite Hallel to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu over the Yeshua. So the Gemara asks, how long is the Hallel going to take already? It's not going to take 2 hours. It's not the Kalbach. It's going to take 15, 20 minutes. So why don't they say the Hallel first? When it rains, say the Hallel, and then go home and eat. So the Gemara makes a statement, Einam Hallel El Al Keres Maleya B'Nefesh Seveya. You have to recite Hallel when you're in a very good mood. So if you're starving, you're not going to be in a good mood. So Taisus points out, but we always say Hallel right after Shachris, and you're not allowed to eat before davening. You don't eat till after Musaf, so we always say. So Taisus makes a distinction. Hallel on Rosh Chodesh and Hallel on Shalosh Regalim on Yom Tov and Chanukah. That's a Hallel reminiscent. That's a Zecher LeYeshua. We're reciting Prokem from Tehillim that David HaMelech said. But Hallel B'Shas HaYeshua, when the Baruch Shalom gives us Yeshua right now, that's supposed to be a spontaneous Hallel. We're supposed to say Hallel. Not with quoting what David HaMelech said in Sefer Tehillim. We're supposed to recite Sheva. For that, you have to be in a very good mood. So Hallel, when it rains and there was a Tziris Kshonim in it and it saves the day, saves the whole situation, that's a Hallel B'Shas HaYeshua. So that you have to eat first. So the Balamor writes, on Pesach night, the Hallel is also considered Hallel B'Shas HaYeshua. As the Mishnah reads, B'chol dor ador chayiv adam liris esatzmo, kilu hu yotzim in Mitzrayim. We have to visualize, we have to have the feeling as if we just left Mitzrayim tonight. B'fichach anachna chayovim l'Hallel. That's why we should feel obligated to recite a spontaneous Hallel tonight on Pesach night. That's called Hallel B'Shas HaYeshua. The Ran also quotes this from the Gaon and from Rav Haigod. That's why the Balamor writes that the main Hallel is really the Hallel that's recited after the meal. Al Keres Maleo V'Nefesh Seveya. A lot of people have a Nigan for the first half of Hallel. Then the second half of Hallel, they have no Nigans, so they run through it quickly. So the Balamor has this famous comment that the more important part of the Hallel is the second part of the Hallel that's after the meal. He was the Chavrusa of the Raivid. The Raivid was older than him. The Raivid was much older than the Rambam, but he was also older than his Chavrusa, Rabbi Nizrachi Alevi. The Raivid is also known for many of his famous comments. In several places, the Raivid writes as if he had Ruach HaKodesh. He writes, Kvar Hafia Ruach HaKodesh Beveis Midrashenu. We have established that the din is Kach V'Kach. So this is a big Shaila in Achrayim, how to read the Raivid. Did he really mean that literally? That he had Ruach HaKodesh? Some say that he was big in Kabbalah, and his son was also in Kabbalah. So they say that's what the rabbi wrote. Farvi Roch HaKodesh Bebeis B'Mashenu. And many others think that it's just a melitza. Rav Soloveitchik thought the second way. He didn't think that the rabbi was saying that he figured out these dinim Roch HaKodesh. When a person works hard and he has a Seyaita Rishmaya to figure out what the din is, so the rabbi calls that Hafia Roch HaKodesh Bebeis B'Mashenu. The Rebbe is famous for a lot of his shitas. For example, one place where he writes, we had Ruach HaKodesh, is about whether the Mokam HaMikdosh has Kedusha Bizman Hazeh. So this was a machlokes in the days of the Tanoim, and it was again a machlokes in the days of the Amoraim. And the machlokes, the Rambam and the Rebbe. The Rambam writes that the Mokam HaMikdosh was endowed with Kedusha by Shlomo HaMelech when he built the first Beis HaMikdosh, and since the basis of the Kedusha is the Hashuras HaShchinah, the Shchinah is always there, so the Makam HaMikdosh retained the Kedusha throughout. It still had Kitchel HaSilavai. Makam HaMikdosh has the Kedusha today, all the way back from the days of Shlomo HaMelech. And the Ravid has a famous comment disagreeing with the Rambam. He says it can't be, because our tradition has it, based on the Pesukim in Navi, that when the third Beis HaMikdash will be built, it'll have a greater Hashuras HaShchina even than the Mishkan had. So if the Makam HaMikdash was endowed with Kedusha by Shlomo HaMelech, so it already has Kedusha. So how is the Shechina going to be even more apparent than it was in the Bais Rishon and Bais Sheni? So the Ravid says, no, the Pshat is like this. When Shlomo HaMelech built the first Beis HaMikdosh, he knew already b'nevuah from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, from the time of the Chet Amaraglim, that the Beis Rishon is going to be Chariv. So when he endowed the Makam HaMikdosh with Kedusha, he only intended that it should be Kodesh until the Churban. When Ezra Nechemiah built the second Beis HaMikdosh, they already knew from the days of Shlomo HaMelech, based on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, that Shlomo HaMelech said, if after the Golas Bavel, the Jews will return to Eretz Yisrael, Yalu Kachayma, everyone will come back en masse, so then the Bais Sheni will be the everlasting Beis HaMikdash. But Lamaisa, it didn't happen. Hardly anybody showed up, a small percentage of the population. The overwhelming majority of the Jews remained behind in Babel. Hardly anybody came back. So therefore, Shlomo HaMelech already said, Baruch HaKodesh, that the second Beis HaMikdash will be Osid Lehechorev. So when Ezra Nechemiah, Yodeo Haya Ezra, when Ezra built the second Beis HaMikdash, Yodeo Haya Ezra, She'asad Lecharev. So when he endowed the Makam HaMikdash with Kedusha, he only intended that it should be Kodesh during that period of time that the second Beis HaMikdash will last. So after the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so there's no more Kedusha. Then when the third Beis HaMikdash will be built, we'll have to endow it again with Kedusha, so then we'll be Mekadosh with a higher level of Kedusha even that the Mishkan had, the Mishkan that Moshe Rabbeinu had. So that's a famous dispute, the Rambam and the Ravid, whether a Tomei is permitted to enter the Makam HaMikdash today. According to the Ravid, sounds from the Ravid that there's no Isser, the simple reading of the Ravid, there's no Isser for a Tomei to enter. So in the Mishnah Brura, he writes in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, and then he writes this in the Likutei Halachos, Chavetz Chaim writes it, that this issue, whether there's Kedushas HaMikdash today, is a machlokes, the Rambam and the Ravid, we have no hachra, so you have to go to Chumrah, so we shouldn't permit a Tomei to enter into the Har HaBayis. We are machmir, the Ravid I mentioned before, Ravid wrote a whole sefer on the laws of Taras HaMishpacha that's called Balei HaNefesh. So we are machmir like the Ravid lechatchila. There is a din of Maim Shu'uvim. If you carry the water in a container, in a bucket, and then pour it into the mikveh, so that's not acceptable. Maim shuvim is no good. What if I carry the water in a bucket, but it's not in a liquid form? I carry ice, or I carry snow in a bucket, and then I throw it into the mikveh, then it melts there in the mikveh. So the Mishnah says that that's okay. So it should be easy to make a mikveh. Take ice, carry it in a bucket, and then put it into the mikveh and then let it melt. So Rav Chaim Oizer writes that the minhag ha'olam is to be machmir lechatchila for the Ravid shita. The Ravid says that that din in the Mishnah, that if you carry the water when it's in a solid state, it's ice or it's snow, you carry it in a bucket, it doesn't become Mayim Shuvim. That's only for the lighter din of Gimel Lugim Mayim Shuvim, pasling a mikveh chaser. But if the whole mikveh is made up of Maim Shuvim that was carried in a solid form, that we shouldn't be making. So Chaim Oizer writes in Achiezer that the minhag olam is lahak melachatchila. Unless you have no brera, so then, b'leis brera, then we don't follow that right. But there are many, many different opinions of the Raivin that we follow. The Raivin has a very fascinating chiddush. The Raivin sides with the Rashi and Tosfos opinion against the Rambam. Raivin thinks that the obligation to be mafrish trumas and maisus in Eretz Yisrael only applies ben Torah to Dogon Tirush v'Yitzar. Because that's how the pasuk reads. Reishis the goncha. Reishis means the truma. Reishis the goncha. Tirosh chavitzarecha. Dogon is the chameshis mini dogon, the wheat, barley, etc. And tirosh is wine or grape juice, grapes and grape juice. And yitzar is olives and olive oil. And everything else, the whole chiyuv to be mafrish truma samaisus, is only made the rabbanon. The Rambam's opinion is not so. The Rambam thinks that if grapes and olives are chayv and shumas and maizah, so all fruits that grow on trees are chayv and atar and shumas and maizah. Vegetables are only midirabbanah. Kidneys is only midirabbanah. But all fruits that grow on a tree are chayv and shumas and maizah, except for buxer. The Gemara says buxer is not chayv and atar. So the Rambam says, because buxer is not basically not Michael Odom. It's Michael Behem. That's what the Rambam writes. And the Raivid disagrees. What's wrong with Buxer? It's normal. He says, no, Buxer is Midirabbanan because all peris are ilon. All fruits that grow on trees are only Midirabbanan, only olives and grapes. So the Raivid writes in one place, even though my opinion is, like Rashi and Tosfos, that the obligation to be Mafris, Chumas, and Maisris only applies Minotera to Dogon, Tirush, V'Yitzah, those three, Hameshis, Minay, Dogon. And Tirish is the wine and the grapes and the yitzar, the olives and the olive oil. And there's no obligation to be marfish on kidneys and all vegetables and so on, and all other peris elon. But the Raivin writes a fascinating chiddush. If the farmer will be marfish, the hafrasha will be chal min haTorah. And then where does that lead you? So he has chidushim on top of chidushim. What will be the status of this truma, which was voluntary truma? You weren't obligated to be mafrish the truma, but once you mafrish it, it's chal min haTorah. So what status will that have? Yes, fascinating chidushim about that. There's a famous Raivid that many Kohanim who are interested in going to medical school all discover this Raivid's opinion. There is a discussion in the Gemara Nazir. The Nazir is not permitted to be metamei to any mace, even to the seven relatives. Like a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to be metame only to a mace mitzvah. And a Kohen Hedyot is not allowed to be metame to any mace except for a mace mitzvah or the seven relatives. So the Rambam understood, based on the Gemara, it's a question how to read the Gemara and how to paskin. So the Rambam understood from the Gemara that if a Kohen, let's say, attended his father's funeral on a Sunday morning, and then Sunday afternoon there's someone else's funeral, so the Rambam says he's not going to be adding more tumah if he goes to the second funeral on the same day. A person who's a tamei meis has to wait 7 days till he can go to mikveh. And on the third day, let's say the funeral is on a Tuesday. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So Thursday, someone has to sprinkle paraduma water on him. And then a week later, let's say he went to the, when did he say, went to the funeral on Tuesday. Next week on Monday is the seventh day, so he needs Hazor Shlishi Shvi. He has to wait at least to the third day after he attends the funeral to have Hazor Paraduma water. Then on the seventh day, and then Ershti can go to Mikvah and become Tohar. So the Rambam writes that if he attended a funeral, let's say Beheter, one of the seven relatives died, or Meis Mitzvah, or whatever, then on the same day he wants to be Metami himself again. So the Rambam says, even though he's not adding additional tuma al tuma, so he's not becoming more tummy, he can't become tohar anyway until the seventh day. He has to have hazar shlishi shvi, then he has to go to mikveh. So the Rambam says, nonetheless, this is an isa deraisa. The kohen will be loiken, and the Raivid disagrees and he thinks it's not correct. All based on the Gemara, how you read the Gemara, how you should paskin. So the Raivid thinks if he's not adding on, if he went to his father's funeral on Sunday, then someone else's funeral on Monday. So he's pushing off the possibility of Hazor Shlishi Shvi another day. So he's Maisiv Tumal Tumasa, making himself Tomei for a longer period of time. But if he goes to the second funeral on the same day, so he's not adding on additional days of Tumah. So the Rebbe thinks, it sounds from the Rebbe that he says that that's permissible. That's questionable, but that's what it says. That's how many assume. So based on that Rebbe, some of the Rishonim, from some of the later Rishonim said that a Yoistep is Manazet, we don't have any Paraduma water anyway. So even if the Kohen once became Tomei Tumas Meis, he once attended a funeral of one of the seven relatives, and we don't have Paraduma water. So what do you mean? He's not prolonging the Tahara process an extra day. Ben Kobako, nobody has any Paraduma water. So the Ravid, the summary Shainim said, based on Shulti Giborim says this, based on the Ravid, that it would be permissible for the Kohen to be Mitamela Mason as Manazet. That is not the commonly accepted opinion. We do accept the Ravid's opinion, but again, the Tumas Chutzalo Oretz. The Gemara has a din with the Rabbanon, that we treat all of Chutzalo Oretz as one big Beis HaKvaris. Either because there was so much Shvichas Damim, traveling through different countries where there are always Shvichas Damim that we know of in our history, or because of the Meisei Mabul. It's unclear from the Gemara why. The Mabul didn't affect Eretz Yisrael. So whatever the reason is, the Chachamim made a din with the Rabbanah to treat all of Chutz La'aretz as one big Beis HaKvaris. And if a Kohen was born in Chutz La'aretz, he's supposed to run right away to Eretz Yisrael. And if a Kohen lives in Eretz Yisrael, he's not allowed to go to Chutz La'aretz, because it's like going to a Beis HaKvaris. With the Rabbanan, we treat all of Chutz La'aretz like a Beis HaKvaris. So the common practice is not so. The Kohanim who live in Chutz La'aretz are not running to Eretz Yisrael. The Kohanim live in Eretz Yisrael. The Panav Yisrael was a Kohen, his name was Kohanim. He always used to come to Chutz La'aretz to raise money. So how can they go to Chutz La'aretz? It's against the din. So Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Kivega says, but again, to this din with the Rabbanan, of Tumas Chutz La'aretz, that it's like a big Beis HaKvaris, everybody relies on the Ravid. Since we don't have Paraduma water today, and when he's Metame himself again, is not really prolonging all the Kohanim Atomei anyway. When you have no Paraduma water, so you can't really say he's prolonging his man of the Tumah. He has to wait longer. Ben Kovako, we have to wait till we're going to have a Paraduma. So that's the Minigal of his Lahaka, like the Ravid, been again to Chutz La'aretz, but actually to attend a funeral. That the common practice is that we don't accept the Ravid's opinion. This is a famous topic. The Rebbe Yehuda has a running commentary printed on the side of the Shulchan Aruch that's called Dogel Mervavo. So he writes that this is a misunderstanding of the Ravid, that the Ravid never said that a Kohen who doesn't prolong the Tumah is permitted to be Metame LeMeisim. He just said that it's a lower level it's usur, it's a lower level prohibition, and you don't get Malkus. And he says he heard this from an Adam Gadol. He doesn't write who the Adam Gadol was. So the Chasam Sefer was a Talmud of Rav Nosson Nadler in Frankfurt. And when they chased Rav Nosson Nadler out of Frankfurt, he started davening Avar HaSfardit in Frankfurt. Nusach Svart in Frankfurt, and he started, he wasn't in Frankfurt, they're very makbed on all the minhagim, everything has to be just so. And he was a little too open minded for them, so he was a gadol, he was an autumn gadol, they chased him out of town. So when they chased him out of town, so his Talmud went with him. So there was a period of time that the Chasam Sefer, the young Talmud, was together with the Rebbe Rav Nosson Nadler across the bridge from Prague. The Rebbe Yehuda was the rabbi in Prague. Rav Nosson Nadler was, for some reason or another, didn't go to Prague. He lived in the village across the river from Prague. So the Chasam Sefer, as a young boy, would go back and forth to the Rebbe Yehuda, delivering messages and learning from Rav Nosson Nadler. So this aura was given to the Rebbe Yehuda by Rav Nosson Adler, based on the Ravid and the Tmim Deyim. That's a collection of tshuvas of the Ravid. But the Ravid seems pretty clearly to state that he never said that the Kohen is allowed to be Metame LeMeisim. Just meant that he's ain't a loike. It's a lower level ism. So that's what the Chasam Sefer writes in one of his tshuvas, that when the Nadi Behuda says he heard this ha'orah from an Adam Gadol, he says, that was my Rebbe, and I was the one who delivered the message there. I was the one who came and told him and gave the letter from Rav Nosson Adler. He told him in person that his Rebbe pointed out that the Tmim Deim writes Beferish that he never meant to say the Kohen is Tomei anyway. He's permitted to be Metamei L'Meisim. It just meant that he's Ein Elokim. The Ravid has always original interpretations in Gemaras, that we always consider his opinion very seriously. Many of his opinions have been accepted Halacha L'Meisim and Shulchan Aruch, and all Halakim of Shulchan Aruch. Anyway, the Ravid and the Baal HaMor, Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi, both lived in Lunel for a period of time. They both learned in Narbona by the Ravid, the one who, the Rabbeinu Avram Abez, who wrote the Sefer HaEshkol. And the Ravid married the daughter of the Ravid, Baal HaEshkol. And later on, they both lived in Lunel. And later on, when the Ravid made his own yeshiva, at that time he lived in Paskir. All of these villages were all in this area, Provence. By plane, so they give you rolls, and they say that these are mezainis rolls. Since when is a roll a mezainis roll? So many rabbanim feel that if you didn't use any water in making the rolls, they only use juice, and when you eat the roll, it tastes like cake. It doesn't really taste like bread. So that's cake. So it's bari min mezainis. Even if it were bari min mezainis. But if you eat it as a sandwich, as part of a sandwich, you eat it as part of a meal. We were just learning in the Daf Yomi the other day that cakes are sometimes mezainis and sometimes hamotzi. If you eat a ton of cake and you get filled up by it, so that's a kriya suda. If you eat the cake like a sandwich, so then that itself is a kriya suda. Especially these mezainis rolls, very hard really. When you eat the roll, it tastes the same as any other roll. It tastes like a regular loaf of bread. So it's very, very questionable whether the mezainis roll is really bari min mezainis. The pashta says that it's really hamotzi. There was a period of time, several years, when the OU would not give a hashgacha on these mezainis rolls. They only had a hashgacha from the chassidish rabbanim, because all the rabbanim in the OU felt that it's hamotzi. It's not bari min mezainis. Now they caved in. So they give the OU, but the rabbanim from the OU office do not believe that it's mezainis. They feel that it's hamotzi. Pizza, the pashtus is, if you have a pie with a filling in it, you have cherry pie, apple pie, you have dough on top, dough on bottom, and then you have some fruits in the middle, blueberry, blackberry pie, whatever it is. So that's, b'chol ha'deis, that's pas habo b'kisti. You have a kiss, it's a packet. So you have dough on top, dough on the bottom, fruits in the middle, so that's pasla bobi kisne. That if you eat a little bit of it, it's bar minim zainis, and if you eat a ton of it, and you fill yourself like a regular meal, that should be hamaitzi. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, bamedvar mamurim, if you have fruit in the middle, what if you have dough on top, dough on the bottom, and then you put flesh in the middle, or then you put cheese in the middle? So you made a sandwich of flesh, so you cook the flesh together with you bake the flesh together with the bread. If you would have baked the bread separately and the flesh separately and made a sandwich, everybody knows it would have been hamotzi. So now that you bake the flesh in the bread, so it's also hamotzi. You made a sandwich and it's hamotzi, or you put in cheese. That's why many are of the opinion that pizza is always hamotzi. Mamish, you break the Shulchan Aruch, says like that. Machaber uses a lashon pasta. He says if you made a pasta with dough on top, dough on bottom, cheese in the middle, so you bake the cheese sandwich, and that shouldn't be bar min mezainis, that should be hamotzi. They say that when they asked Rav Moshe Feinstein the shaila, what bracha to say over the pizza, so he asked 1,001 questions in advance until he gave his psak that if you eat one slice it'll be mezainis, and if you eat two slices then it's hamotzi. But many thought not like Rabbi Shem. Many thought that even if you eat one slice, it should also be hamotzi. That's what it sounds like in the Shulchan Aruch. We were learning the other day when we learned Daf Yomi. Let's say a person attends a wedding and he doesn't plan to stay till the end. So if he's going to wash, he's supposed to wait to answer mezumah together. You're not supposed to leave early. So a lot of people attend the wedding, they don't wash, they don't eat bread. And they're starved because they were in the office all day and they're hungry, and the waiter didn't bring the next course yet, so So the nibble on some of the crackers that are on the table, crackers are there for nash. So the nibble on some of the crackers. So if a person already finished eating everything and is ready to platz, and then he nibbles on crackers at the end, that's not called a kriya suda. He's not really eating the crackers in order to fill himself. He's already full. He's already stuffed. But if he's waiting for the next course and he's hungry after a whole day of being in the office, he starts nibbling on the crackers in order to fill himself up. So then the crackers become a chelak of a kviya suda. That's how the Magen Avraham says, that's how the Mishnah Berurah quotes, and that's how Rabbi Moshe Feinstein paskens. That if you eat cake or cookie or crackers in the middle of a meal when you didn't wash, and you eat it to fill yourself up, to help fill yourself up, so that makes a kviya suda. You have to wash and say hamoitzi and bench on the crackers. Somehow this is the different dinim. I call todim in mazel. Even dinim in the Shulchan Aruch, some dinim are more popular than others. So this din about the kviya suda and the cake and the cookies is not as popular. If you eat wheatina farina, that you can eat a ton of that. That doesn't have a loaf shape. It's never going to become hamoitzi lechem min haaretz. So if you eat Wheaties, Cheerios, that's not a loaf shape. That's never going to become a motzi lechem in haaretz. But if you eat cake or cookies that is in the shape of a loaf, that's what we call teresa de nahamo. So it does have a loaf shape. The other thing is that it's a pasach of the kistan. So then if you kaver suda on that, then the bracha is supposed to be a motzi lechem in haaretz. We'll have to figure out when we're going to learn daf yomi later today.